going to go deeper into the concussion issue now. Pleased to have on the line from the Elliott Sports Medical Clinic in Burlington, formerly out of London, Dr. Paul Eklund. Dr. Paul Eklund, welcome. How are you?
Thank you for inviting me, and also thank you for your interest.
Oh, I think we're all interested, and I was going to say fascinated, but that's not the right word for this. Interested is better. And just off the top, because we've got a lot of questions here to understand, but you have put together a sports library. Can you tell us about it and where we could look at it?
The library is located at www.sportconcussionlibrary.com, and it's a completely free and freestanding library site. In which contains multiple components to educate the public. It was designed specifically to empower parents to protect their children that play contact collision sport.
I'm looking at your website here. I mean, this is perhaps as in-depth as anything I've seen, Dr. Eklund. It's quite fascinating. You've got some of the tests for concussions. You've got other ways to diagnose. You've got documentaries. You've got research. Legislative initiatives. I mean, this is as comprehensive as it gets.
Well, we wanted to be specific because it is a library. You know, there are a lot of sites, very good sites, such as Think First, like the CDC site in Atlanta, that contain a lot of components. But what I saw when I was doing the research was a lack of one site that contains all the information. We have a live librarian that can be accessed, professional librarian that can help out with searches. But also, as in any library, the person has to go in. I'd like the parent and the athlete to go in together. And there's it's not all highly technical research papers. There's 3,300 of them on the site. But there's also general information and links to sites such as Think First and CDC that can give you more simplified explanations, from the basic explanation of what is a concussion to the most advanced research paper.
Dr. Eklund, from what you've learned about this and know about this, what do you think is the biggest misconception about a concussion?
Well, you know, I think I've said this before, is that a concussion is a serious brain injury. And I think that's the big conversion that we're hoping to make sure that people understand, is it's an injury that can have both short and long-term effects on the person's on their future. And that it should not be, as it has been in the past, trivialized as a, you know, in those phrases such as a dinger and a bell ringer, because, you know, I see individuals that are taken completely out of university, taken out of their high school classes, have significant struggles because they did not get identified properly and they did not get to the specialist to properly treat them.
Dr. Eklund, here's a question that can't be answered, but I'll throw it your way anyway, because I'm interested in anybody who's a specialist in this field offering a thought. How do you prevent concussions? Or how do you limit them to the best of your ability?
Well, there's a couple thoughts on this. The biggest way is to educate. And this is what I talked about, is the empowering of the parent and the athlete to find out exactly what a concussion is, what to look for, what to avoid. I mean, on the bottom line, you have to stop hitting the head intentionally. And this is what's been happening too often in our contact and collision sports. And if we can get rid of the intentional hits and recognize the ones that do happen, we can significantly decrease the amount of these serious brain injuries.
And just to follow that up, you see what happened last night in the Ottawa-Buffalo game, where Milan Mikolic collides with his teammate Erik Karlsson, and it's pretty clear that Mikolic's head is not a part of the collision. It does not take the impact, and I don't even think he hit it that hard, if he did at all, when he went down to the ice after colliding with Karlsson, yet he's out with a concussion. So it's not just simply stopping the hits to the head. These things seem to crop up when you least expect them.
Well, I mean, it is important to understand that although certain professional entities, professional sport entities say it's not to the head, you can get a concussion from a hard hit to the body because the forces are translated to the brain through the body. But a lot of times the concussions that occur strictly from the body are a result of multiple concussions before that time. And, that's the one that tips it over the threshold to produce those long-lasting, a lot of times, symptoms or post-concussion syndrome. But you're right, you can produce a concussion or a rapid movement of the brain that causes disruption both in the substance of the brain and also the metabolism by a blow to the body. This is what people have to become aware of. That it's not, as you said, not just a direct hit to the head, but can be indirectly through a hit to the body. And those are the ones where if you see a person exhibiting signs or talking about his symptoms of lightheadedness, dizziness, the irritation from bright lights, or wobbling, loss of balance, then you have to take those seriously. And those individuals should be taken out of the game and be assessed by a medical professional.
Dr. Paul Eklund is our guest from the Elliott Sports Medical Clinic in Burlington, has a concussion library, and we'll repeat the website later on so you can look at it. But, Dr. Eklund, one of the things that troubles me when you see the NHL scenario is a guy gets hit and then he's asked if he's okay. I mean, is he always going to know if he's okay?
I think you brought up a really good point. Never ask the athlete. They'll always say, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
And so that has to be taken out. And this is what we did in the study 2.5 years ago, is we took that out of the therapist duties. We took that out of the athlete's duties. We said, I want to see this player from an objective, not part of the team. I want to see this player. I want to evaluate them medically with a specialist doing that evaluation. And, we found a large number, 7 times greater than was in the literature. And though that's a conservative estimate. So I've actually done this research. We're repeating it this year as well. And so you do not ask the athlete. If you suspect it, then he's out until he's been cleared by a physician that is that has experience in diagnosing concussion.
And the second part of that is that there appears to me anyway to be some sort of a delayed onset sometimes. So wouldn't it be prudent to take the individual out, give him the concussion protocol tests immediately, and then say, come back in 2 or 3 days and we'll do this again?
Well, that's what we do.
I mean,
this is what we did is if you suspect, despite if these objective tests are not that sensitive right now, this is what we're trying to develop. But it comes down to the gold standard of a physician clinical diagnosis, which should not be affected by, he has to get back in the game or he has to get back to his playoff game. This is the person's long-term health that's at stake. And it is a clinical decision. It's not about going into a room for 10 minutes and saying that's enough. If you suspect, a physician suspects it, and regardless if he has a negative, objective test, which is a SCAT2 or any other test, then he's out. And you're right, it can be a delayed onset, and that's the worst thing, is to put somebody back into play when they're suffering from a brain injury, because it can be much, much worse, a second or third hit. And it does happen. They're steps slow, and they do get hit.
Dr. Eklund, I'm just looking at some of the discussions and articles that have been written using some quotes that you've given, and you've talked in the past about seeing an 11-year-old who'd already been concussed twice. There is some literature here regarding a U of Calgary study finding that of the 9,000 11- and 12-year-old kids playing hockey in Alberta, that 700 at one point or another had been concussed. I mean, that's downright frightening. And so each concussion is different. I understand that, but I'm wondering if you can explain what a concussion does to a developing brain, that of a young child or a teenager, as opposed to an adult, because the brain isn't fully formed yet, is it?
No, and you're, again, another good point, because what we know now in pediatric concussions is that they are susceptible, and the neural tracts or the ways that the brain is developing are not fully formed until about 18 years of age. They take usually much longer to get full recovery. And in the competitive sport we have today, where you have 11, 12-year-olds training year-round for one sport, the pressures on even at that age are immense. And I see this in my office on a daily basis, players between 11, 12, 14 years of age that are under incredible stress. Even their parents are. And I think that's another point to bring out, is the parents' responsibility to say, this is my responsibility to learn about this injury, to protect my child for his long-term health. From about 5 years of age, a lot of parents have done incredible good things as far as supporting their son or daughter's athletic excellence. But they have to understand that their primary responsibility is their long-term health of their child, regardless if they have to sit and recover or if they've had too many concussions, then it's the wrong sport for them. I mean, my job as a sports physician is to get that individual back safely without long-term injury, and this is what I try to impress upon the parent, that their primary duty is for that long-term health of their child.
Dr. Eklund, those video highlights that we're seeing on a nightly basis in the NHL where individuals are either skating into each other or being hit, does that in any way, shape, or form equate or equal a car crash?
Well, I mean, they describe that way on the sidelines of a kickoff return in football, and the speeds are you know, greater when you get a person on skates, you know, on an ice. You really have to look at the forces and the miles per hour that they're gliding at, and a lot of times purposefully, and because these are elite athletes, predominantly know where their body is, where their body is in space. Accidentally, it happens every once in a while, but the predominant thing that we have to look at from the you know, from the Tyke and Pee Wee level all the way up is to teach respect for each other. And to avoid this, win at all costs, and also to avoid these intentional injuries. In our study 3 years ago, we found out that, you know, 69% of the concussions we diagnosed were directly to the head, and 80% were with purpose. So that's what can be, people can be misled that it's just an accidental or freak accident. But in reality, usually it's not. And the speeds are great. The players are bigger. You know, they always talk about the peripheral issues, but the predominant one is about really trying to reduce the number of impacts to the head and to the upper body of these individuals.
Doctor, you've been at this for a little while, I guess about a decade in the junior hockey field. It feels like we're talking about this a whole lot more, and that's sort of built up over the last couple of years. Would you say we're in a worse spot now, a better spot now, somewhere in between, say, today, going back to comparing it to 2000? So I know it's good we're talking about it, but are more people getting hurt, or are we just finding out more about it?
I think it goes on both of those. I think more people are finding out about it, and you know, researchers like myself and Dr. Cantu in Boston, Dr. Tatter in Toronto, are pushing the issue because we're putting the information so you no longer have an excuse saying you don't know what this injury is. And it's being identified. It's evolving science for sure. So that is a component of it. But if you look at on the library, the conversation with Roy McMurtry, the Honorable Roy McMurtry, he looks back 40 years ago when he was actually prosecuting individuals in the NHL for this violence. And violence is the intent to injure. And why hasn't it changed? Why hasn't it changed top down? We're going bottom up at the grassroots saying parents have the responsibility and should be empowered to make a change and make a change for the better for hockey, football, lacrosse. So we play these contact collision sports without fear. And if the child does get hurt, then he gets identified and treated appropriately.
Just one more before we let you go. You've been at this for a while. What have you learned about this?
Well, I've learned that we can make change, and you know, there's a lot of people. When I started working with this and really trying to make a difference, was you know, it'll never change. This is just part of the culture. Well, it starts at the culture, and it starts at the culture of saying we can play these games. We have to make a change in the games, and people are so fearful of this that it will change the games dramatically. But actually, it changes it for the better. It changes to demonstrate the skill of these incredible athletes, without having lifelong injuries that impact their quality of life. I mean, they can't hold jobs. They can't even sit on an exercise bike sometimes.
Dr. Eklund, thanks very much for your time. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you. Dr. Paul Eklund from the Elliott Sports Medical Clinic in Burlington. And Scott, give me that website again. I just want to read it out so we can all write it down.
It's www.sportconcussionlibrary.com.